You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, mate. Your independent voice of Fulham FC, mate. My name's George Cooper and welcome to the show, mate.
What a win that was! 3-0 at home to Tottenham Hotspur, all but ending their Champions League dreams. The perfect performance. It was Muniz, it was Lukic, it was simply flawless. Such a wonderful afternoon at the Cottage. Tottenham didn't come anywhere near. Fulham, on the other hand, were clinical. We controlled possession. Well, this is a team that has gained plaudits the world over in Tottenham Hotspur. Oh, their pressing game, their high line, they're so daring, they're so attacking. Fulham just completely blitzed them, and it was a wonderful game for the whole Fulham fan base. With me today is Mr. Farrell Monk. How are you doing, sir?
Good day, mate. Good day. Good day to all the Bruces and all the Sheilas out there. What a day it was yesterday.
Yeah, some game. Dan Cook is also with me. How are you, good sir?
I'm doing really good. It was, I quite liked an evening kickoff. You know, it'd been so long since we have a 5:30. Went to the pub afterwards, got home, had a Chinese takeaway at 10 in the evening. Just a great day.
Top notch, start to finish. I'm also joined by AF. It's good to have you back, sir. For those listening on the podcast, AF has got a signed Fulham shirt from years gone by, which is number 9. And I can't think of the player that would be the name on the back. But you've put on top of it, sort of stenciled in Sharpie, Muniz over
there. I'm not putting up with any of this previous Mitrovic bullshit. We've got much better in Muniz, and I'm very happy that I'm finally fixing this shirt.
Good stuff. You got some 3-word reviews for us, AF. I imagine there were some pretty good fun ones in there.
There were. I mean, everyone was having great fun, right? So we got kicking us off with Fulham DC with Muniz eclipses sun. We've got Hadley and Dazza with Live, Laugh, Lukic, which is a sign I would get in my house. We've got Dan McGrath with Serbian goal scorer replaced. I'm not sure whether he's meaning with Lukic or perhaps Muniz is somehow going to represent Serbia, which would be quite a turn up for the books. Or we've got Vincent Leander with American Roberto Carlos. Wallop some free kicks in, then we'll talk. Richard Cardis with Jedi mind tricks, and he was definitely pulling plenty of those yesterday. And then shout out to our own very foul monk, Tottenham get sashed.
Very good. I particularly like Live, Laugh, Lukic. That's, yeah. I can feel a Fulhamish merch line coming there somehow. That's sublime. Dan, I mean, just all around, the perfect performance. I'm struggling to think of any faults. Our back four, superb. Bernd Leno, captain, another very, very solid performance. Didn't have to do an awful lot, in fairness, but whenever he was called upon, he delivered. Just dominated this midfield, and some midfields in Spurs that contains just quality players. Can you think of a single fault in that performance? Because I certainly can't.
genuinely think the only fault you could pick out was that it wasn't 4 or 5 nil. As genuinely as far as the only thing I could dig up, because we actually had chances to win by more. And, you know, as problems go, it's not the biggest one in the world, is it? I just all, as you said, all over the pitch. And I was listening to, because I couldn't get enough of it this morning, I watched like the extended Marco Silva post-match press conference, the instant reaction with Marco Silva, Rodrigo Muniz interview after the game, Jedi's interview after the game. And everyone was just saying, like, you can't pick out one person who was head and shoulders above the rest, because everyone was just such a top level. Like, both fullbacks great going forward and defensively. The midfield trio were superb. And I said it on the quick take, when you compare our midfield to who we were coming up against, for them to come out on top against a midfield three of Bissouma, Saar and Maddison is incredible. And that says a lot about how well they played. And then our front three were just like so good and fun. Like Iwobi with that little bit of, you know, that trickery. And I don't know, it's like a languid style of skill. Like he goes past people without even looking like he's trying. It's like, I'm just going to shift it left, shift it right. Oh, I've gone past you, sorry. And then like Willian on the other side, sort of dazzling, and Rodrigo Muniz bullying. Like, oh, it was so, so good.
I mean, it was just so many standout performances, Farrell. You go through our entire team and it's so, I mean, you got Anthony Robinson, who's just putting a 10 out of 10, just bombing up and down that line. So solid, so resolute, so much skill. That ball for the first goal that Muniz tucked in was just, so he had so much to do. And then you've obviously got Muniz getting a brace, Saka Lukic getting his first goal in a Fulham shirt. Again, justified his starting position once more. If you had to pick anyone, who would you go for, Faz? Because it's just, it's there's a lot to choose from.
My 10-year-old nephew, who was sitting next to me yesterday at the start of the game, was asking me who Fulham's best player this season has been. And we sort of talked about the, you know, the Iwobis, the Willians. But I think, and obviously we mentioned Anthony Robinson before the, you know, as the game was kicking off, basically. But if anything, that performance yesterday has really sort of like cemented his place as a firm, you know, probably the favourite to win player of the season so far. He was exceptional again yesterday. And, you know, much has been written and talked about already about the amount of times he intercepts the ball and drives the team up the pitch. He's absolutely integral to the way that Fulham play. I love the way, especially like where I sit, which is, you know, quite, which is in the Johnny Haynes stand, and you can see how the cogs are turning in his head. He reads the game so well that even before a player who is even thinking about passing it out wide, he's already on the move to intercept the pass even before it's made. He's just an exceptional footballing brain coupled with all the attributes of a top player, and yesterday was a fine example of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a performance to behold, one that will go down in folklore, no doubt. We also, AF, had the perhaps maybe surprise pairing of Lukic and Joao. There was a lot of debate going into the game. You know, it would have felt incredibly harsh to have dropped Lukic given the performances that he's put in of late. But then we've got João Palhinha, our best player, coming back. Can the two play together? Are we going to see Harrison Reed in there? But ultimately, it was the João and Lukic pairing. And I mean, boy, did it work, AF.
I think we have to give some credit here to Silva for taking the risk there, because a lot of us, and I remember listening to last week's podcast, and the same was being said, like, can we really, if we put back Paulinho, which we're obviously going to do, can we try Lukic in this new box-to-box role, which is where he's played previously, but not so much for Fulham, right? He's been seen as a backup to Joao. Can we really put him in that in a game against, as you say, that midfield three of Maddison, Saar and Bissouma? Like, that's a pretty mad game to suddenly say, right, Lukic, come and let's step up to this. So I think we give massive credit to Marco for taking that risk. But then Lukic really took the ball by the horns. I said to my dad in the first 5 minutes of the game, I was like, look how high up Lukic is. He was basically next to Andreas Pereira, which helped us so much when it came to the press. I already noticed that, like, we were pressing them a lot higher up than we have probably any other team this season. And it helped with our game plan as well, because he was consistently coming back and supporting João Palhinha. But Palhinha is so good but sometimes we ask him to do too much. Like I've noticed sometimes when Kearney's in the team, like he can go forward and then Kearney's not getting back. So Giles just running left, right, centre, everywhere. And that's where it can seem a little bit erratic. What I noticed just from yesterday's performance was it kind of calmed him down a little bit, if that's even possible. A little bit, just so that midfield felt very balanced for the entirety of that game.
Mm. I mean, it's just another kind of like squad cheat code unlocked, I feel, from Marco. And he's doing it at a rate of knots at the minute. And I mean, that's a very, like, such a viable option going forward. And it was so nice as well to go into this match knowing that we got a full strength squad. I mean, the bench that we had was just phenomenal. And it feel like our season has been so disjointed at times, and there's been frustrating little runs and we've had injury problems and stuff. But for the first time, it feels like everything is just coming together and we're going into each game feeling like there's no pressure on us anymore. We've already done enough to earn Premier League safety, and now it's just we can go into every game from now until the end of the season just being like, okay, what's gonna happen today, lads, you know? And Dan, like I listened to yours and Sammy's quick take early today. It was unsurprisingly quite a joyous affair, but you talked about how Fulham in recent weeks has become a fortress again, and I can't remember the last time, other than in the Premier League certainly, like you're looking back to the Hodgson years where we go into like face the likes of Liverpool, Man U, and genuinely feel like we can take on any team on our day. And there's shades of that in these recent times, you know, we've beaten Arsenal at home, now we've Brighton at home, and now Tottenham at home, and we've still got the likes of City and Liverpool to come at Craven Cottage. And it's just that, do you agree? It's just like that feeling of like, right, we can take on anyone on our day at the minute.
I completely agree. And it's nice. And it's funny because I think actually the focus pretty much all season has been on how poor our away form has been, and how, you know, obviously we and until that game recently where, you know, we'd won one game away from home all season, first game of the season at Everton. And there was a big focus on that, and that's understandable. But actually it's taken until yesterday to turn that around and be like, well, hang on. Yeah, our away form's been terrible, but surely that means actually, hang on, yeah, our home form is ridiculous. Like seventh in the league based on home form is nuts. And it's, I think there's it's fantastic. And you know, there's a little bit of bittersweetness for me because I go home and away, and it would be quite nice to see us win away from home a little bit more frequently. But you want to win in front of the fans. And I thought genuinely there was a really good atmosphere yesterday at Craven Cottage, and it does get the mick taken out of it, and sometimes rightly. You know, we know we're not an absolute cauldron of atmosphere, but there is something really special about when Craven Cottage gets ticking and the Hammersmith end gets on its feet. You know, it just has something about it. And especially under the lights, I don't know, Craven Cottage under the lights is always fun. And that home form is vital, because especially when you start to get towards the back end of the season, you look at some of the games we've got coming up, like away at Luton, away at Nottingham Forest are a couple that I'm really thinking of. Those aren't games you want to rely on having to go to and get points from, because they're scrapping for everything, and they are places where it gets loud and it gets horrid to play in. Whereas you get teams who come to your home and you're like, nah, this is where we run things. And we did that, you know, we knew that pitch, we knew the dimensions, we knew how to make it difficult for Spurs. And it's great to have a proper fortress to play at, because it means no one wants to come there. And again, like Spurs came away from that. I saw a comment on one of our YouTube videos saying that the only team they think they've played this season who were better was City. That says a lot.
Yeah, certainly does. I know what you mean about Fulham under the lights. It just, the atmosphere yesterday was the best I've heard Fulham for the entire of the season for Craven Cottage. It was just brilliant. We were in such good voice. I think it's like the nature of how we came out and just dominated Spurs from the word go. The crowd kind of got the sense that this Spurs team was there for the taking. Also, I think that being a 5:30 kickoff, the couple of hours extra in the pub probably help a little bit. And however, it was actually to my detriment, because I actually, just before the Mooners goal, my pre-game refreshments caught up with me and I missed the bloody goal. First goal I've missed at Fulham for ages. I was absolutely gutted, so I had to watch Mooney's score from the concourse, which is never the same, is it? I mean, I know Don Betts is kind of used to it. That's the only way in which he seems to view goals. But Farrell, the ball from Robinson, he had so much to do. And then even when it came to Mooney's, it was the touch and the finish just of a really, really, really confident striker. And I would argue that's his best goal in a Fulham shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, it's such a lovely, lovely goal. And it's the, it's such a top quality goal. This is a Premier League striker goal. Take nothing away from the fact that Anthony Robinson also produces a lovely deep cross right across between the goalkeeper and their defense. Like, it really, you know, cuts out their defense quite well. And it's just a lovely first touch out of his feet, steadies himself with it and just, you know, finishes it with aplomb. Yeah, you're right. It's the sign of a really good striker. But weirdly, are we now coming to expect that from Rodrigo Muniz, really? You know, we've seen what he's capable now of doing. Like, there was some things in the build-up play that were really good. There was a lovely, like, backheel flick that he did out to Iwobi on the right-hand side at one point. You know, there wasn't really a time where yesterday I felt like when the ball was, you know, coming towards him that he wasn't going to be able to produce something productive from it. It's a shame that you missed it, George, but you know, when you gotta go, you gotta Rodrigo.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really disappointed. But it's interesting point you make there, Faz, is that have we reached the point now where we come to because I still feel like we're in this bit of a sort of honeymoon period with Muniz. Obviously 7-7, the whole league is starting to take note now. I'm getting texts from mates who support other teams being like, oh, I've got like Rodrigo in my fantasy team and stuff like that, which I feel is like a real mark. People are starting to pay attention to this footballer. And at what point are we going to reach that sort of threshold, Faz, where it's like, oh, we just, I mean, every goal, it feels like we're celebrating it on another level because we're so happy for him as a bloke, as a player, how far he's come, and we've got that sort of like unanimous pride for him. But I don't know, do you feel that we'll get to the point where it's just like expected of him? It's just like, of course he's got another brace, it's Muniz, like, what, he's quality. How far off do you think we are from that? Because he's only, let's remember, Mitrovic got 15 goals last season. I think that's right.
14.
So, and we've got, you know, there's plenty of games remaining. Do you think that Muniz could catch up Mitrovic's tally from last year? I mean, that would be quite something, wouldn't it?
I know I sound Kevin Keegan-esque here, but I would love it. I would love it if he gets to 14 goals, especially in that many games as well. I did a little look. I mean, to actually reach that total, he would actually need to score less goals. He needs to score the same amount of goals in more games. So he's actually got more time than he needs because there's 9 games to go, 7 goals needed. Go on, Rodrigo. You're going to do it.
Come on, let's do it.
I think as much as we look at the 14 goals, I mean, Sammy said it yesterday, he's very much on for double figures, and double figures in its own is such a ridiculous achievement, especially when you consider it's double figures in half a season. And I guess you can't just write off all of the games he played before the start of this year, but for the sake of this, let's do it. It's such an incredible feat. And I saw a thing that he is now equal top scorer in 2024 in the Premier League. I think it's Saka and I can't pick who else it was, but there's only two other players who have scored 7. Ollie Watkins. Only two other players who have scored 7 goals since the turn of 2024. That's just nuts. And when you think that people are now genuinely going, oh, Rodrigo Muniz, he's a real future talent. You're like, not a single Fulham fan would have said that to you 6 months ago. And now just random Premier League football fans and pundits are saying it.
Yeah, God, they're jumping on the bandwagon. Let's go.
I think I managed to sort of like work out a list of goals to minutes ratio for the Premier League, and players who have got more than 5 goals this year, there are only like 5 players who have better goals to minutes ratio than Rodrigo Muniz. Chris Wood is one of them, but that's mainly because he scored 3 goals in about 2.5 minutes one game this year. But the others are like Isak, Haaland, and Mo Salah, and Diogo Jota, basically. That's the level that he is at the moment.
May this hot streak continue. And I think we should now turn on to our second goal. Saša Lukić, first for the club. I'm going to open up the debate, AF, because a lot of people think that obviously it came off his knee. It was a really good ball from Timmy Chestnuts, deflected him. Did he mean it? Did he not? I think he did, and I'll tell you for why. Because as soon as it comes off his knee, his glance is looking exactly where the ball ends up. And that, for me, is enough evidence to suggest that it was an intentional, beautiful, Messi-esque bit of skill. What's your take?
So my take on this is that I think they were trying to do their best imitation of the first goal with a deep cross coming from Timmy Chestnuts, and Lukic found himself having to imitate Rodrigo Muniz, and he thought, what would Muniz do? And he went, yeah, he'd whack it in with his knee, wouldn't he? But you're totally right. I think that he meant it in the fact that he's in the right position to be taking a shot, so it's not like he's accidentally hit him. He's in a place where he wants to shoot, because otherwise he'd have probably just jumped back and let it go through to, I think it's Iwobi, who's already in there. So the likelihood is that he meant to do it. But also the celebration doesn't exactly look like he's pretty shocked himself, right? Probably because he scored his first goal. Second of all, that like it's against Spurs. He's got absolutely mobbed. I couldn't have been more happy for him as well. Like, what a turnaround from that Chelsea game where it was a solid 0 out of 10 for his cameo in that one to suddenly start scoring our second goal, which was the meaningful one. That's what really killed the game off. You saw all the Spurs players' heads completely drop. Did he mean it? I hope he did, because he'll remember that one forever, and so will we.
Yeah, yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, like, Dan, Spurs are just, I don't know, we've not beaten them in the league at home since 2008. And I don't know, it's a weird relationship that we got with them. Obviously, we had a lot of our players that were getting a lot of stick early on from the Tottenham fans. Willian, obviously, played for Arsenal and Chelsea. Iwobi as well, mainly the sort of like ex-Arsenal boys. But I mean, just, I don't know what it is, but just beating them just was, it felt very, very sweet yesterday.
It really did. And I think, especially considering that when we went to the new White Hart Lane at the start of this season, that's one of the most outclassed I've seen Fulham in a game this season. Like, we played Spurs there, and I just thought they looked so much better than us. And at no point did I get like excited or concerned about the game, because I just sat back thinking like, there is nothing we can do against this Spurs side. They are just playing brilliant football. So to flip that, when you think that that's, you know what, 20 games later in a season, that to see that difference. And I think one of the things that I would implore people to go and have a little scroll is on the Jack and Joe show that went out on Wednesday on the Fulhamish YouTube channel. Spurs fans came across it. They saw this video. It was titled, Can Fulham Beat Big Ange's Spurs? And I would wager that most of them didn't watch it and just decided to give their answer to the title of the video, which was, no, Fulham can't beat Spurs. Someone said that Spurs would win 7-0. Someone said that's a bit harsh. So they said, okay, maybe 5-1. And just go and have a read through. It is really worth it. Because I think that's one of the things that made it exciting and fun yesterday, was that most people just expect this Postecoglou Spurs side to go and steamroller everyone, and they had a fantastic result against Villa. Like, there's no doubt about that. But no one really gave Fulham a sniff in this game, and I'm not sure why, given how we've been playing recently. So I think I agree, Coops, there was something sweet about it, but I think it's also just contextually, like, both teams going into this game in a vaguely similar vein of form, and obviously Spurs are competing for more, but we're in our best point of this season, and there was absolutely every chance that we could have made a game of yesterday, and we did.
It's quite interesting for me that we actually took on the game, not in a way that we're like, oh, we'll game plan it against how Spurs play. We went up with our own game plan and we just stuck to it, which gives me so much more confidence for the rest of the season. In the fact that we actually went for the man for man and went, we know what's going to happen. Their fullbacks are going to move into the middle of the pitch, and all we'll do is overload those out wide areas. It was a fairly simple game plan executed to perfection, but that gives me so much more confidence in, could we take on other bigger teams? We have done this season already. But looking at the likes of higher placed teams than us, if we go out and play our game, as long as we actually stick to our game plan, we can do incredibly well. It's actually really hard to play against. I don't think a huge amount of people say, oh, we've worked out Fulham and how they play, we can defend against that, because I genuinely don't think they can.
Faz, it's this Tottenham team is just odd. I mean, obviously they smashed Villa 4-0 at Villa Park. I will say, obviously, John McGinn got sent off in that game, which obviously went somewhat in Tottenham's favour. But I really do like Ange Postecoglou, and I think he's a breath of fresh air. He's obviously a character. I love sort of these charismatic managers that we're getting in, and I think he's brilliant for the league, and they are entertaining. It's very rarely a dull moment. But
obviously I'm coming at it from my Fulham hat and I'm thinking we absolutely bossed them, didn't let them come close. But there were periods of the game where Tottenham did come very close. Obviously, James Maddison absolutely bodied Bernardo's water bottle. That was a few, about a foot the other way, probably would have gone in. I mean, Werner sort of missed an open goal as well. They did kind of at times feel like they had that, just that sort of like cursed in front of goal feel about them. Are we just being a little bit too Fulham centric, and or could, if a few sort of marginal things went the other way, could it have been a lot tighter game? What do you reckon?
Well, I think Robinson said in one of his post-match interviews that if they allowed it to get to 3-1, Marco Silva would have been absolutely apoplectic with the team about it. And that shows how much, you know, desire and professionalism that Marco demands from this team, that like, it's not just about, you know, the 3-0s, it's about actually putting in a match-winning performance week in, week out, regardless. We'd obviously got a bit lax towards, you know, certainly towards the end when the game was kind of already won anyway. But yeah, you're right. There were a couple of like really good chances, but it was really good chances in a, you know, 5-10 minute spell out of the 90. At some point, this Spurs team are a good team, and it'd been even more unlikely they were not going to create a chance or two. But saying that, you know, I mean, the loudest cheer I probably gave yesterday is when Paulinho scored the disallowed goal, because that was the point where I thought, oh God, it's safe now at 4-0. And then obviously it was disallowed. So that was slightly disappointing. But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that we need to really show is that, yes, Spurs are a good team and they have demolished some really good teams this year and whatnot. But I feel like Marco just worked them out, really, especially breaking the press. This Tottenham team, obviously, they're quite well documented in pressing high and with their high line. And Fulham said, okay, we'll just play a bit longer and then just have that huge gap you have in between your attack and defence, where they're basically playing with no midfield at all. And although Pereira was doing his wasteful best yesterday in large periods of the game, he was very, very good at finding little pockets of space, finding those sort of like little channels, those passing lanes that we were able to, some of the defenders like Tosin, some of Tosin's passings yesterday was excellent. Finding people like Pereira and finding people like Saša Lukić to break that press. But when we couldn't find that way, they were choosing their moments to play it long up to Muniz. And yes, he might not have won the first ball, but a Fulham player was always there to try and pick up that second ball. And I thought that was absolutely key yesterday.
Dan, were there any other sort of key battles, key areas, key elements of Marco Silva's tactical nous, other than the ones that Faz has just mentioned there, that you think this game was won yesterday?
Yeah, I think Faz makes a great point there in that terms of that Andreas Pereira picking up pockets of space. I saw that too, and I think that sometimes I've been critical of him for not doing that, but he was very good at it. Both him and Lukic were always that option, and where the whole back four, actually, I was going to say Bassi and Tosin, but also Jedi and Castagna, were all very brave in not panicking too early on in that Spurs press, because I think we've seen it at times. The game plan has been, if there's a team that presses high, Fulham will go long and try and hit Muniz and let him hold it up and not let the press affect them. But actually, I think he spotted an opportunity yesterday, Marco, to say like, no, if we're brave and we just take a second longer to see if we can break it through short, simple passes instead of going long, then we've got a better chance of affecting them going forward. And Lukic and Pereira were great at that, picking up that ball. And there was just a number of times when, you know, that like a 10-yard little inside pass goes from Tosin or Bassi and you're screaming like, turn, because Andreas Pereira is picking up the ball and he's got no one within like 10 meters of him. And I think that was really important. I thought both centre-backs were superb defensively as well. And then I think the full-backs quite rightly got so many plaudits, because defensively, I thought they did very well. And when you consider the quality of player they were coming up against, I mean, like Kulusevski, Son, Brennan Johnson and Maddison, let's add him in there, say as a front four, is really potent. And defensively, they were great. And then getting forward, I think this is one of those things that Fulham have, that we can hold over teams. There's nothing overly complex sometimes about the way we play, where you get forward and then you've got fullbacks who overlap. You know, it's almost a thing in football that's slightly gone out of fashion. But it works great if you've got opposition wingers who aren't that bothered in tracking back. You know, if you've got opposition wingers who prefer to affect the game in the final third, then great, because Anthony Robinson is more than quick enough to get down the other end and then fly back and get back into position if it goes wrong. So his ability to just keep on getting up and down that flank was fantastic. I am not Pedro Porro's biggest fan. I think he's a good footballer going forward. I think he's really fallible defensively, and we really rinsed them down that flank at times, and also down the right. I thought it was just those wide areas where Fulham were just better, and we know that if we can exploit those areas, we're really dangerous. And then you add in, you know, Robbo being able to find that quality of cross that sometimes he lacks, then I don't know how teams deal with that. You know, the only way that they can deal with that is by trying to stop Fulham playing out wide. And then that plays into our hands as well, because they've got no counter threat if they do win the ball back. So I thought it was a pretty perfect setup from Marco, and not for the first time, is it? He's done that so many times.
He's a genius.
I don't know if you guys remember, but some point last year, John McKenzie of TIFO did a video about Fulham and their pressing game,
yeah,
and why Fulham were good at beating teams around us in the bottom half of the table, but were not so good against the top six sides, basically. And he basically said that, you know, our pressing game is really good against teams who don't necessarily have the technical ability to break our press, and we can win the ball back that way. But against better teams like the Arsenals and the Man Uniteds and whatnot, who we were losing to, you know, a few times last year, that those teams just had the better ability just to break our press quite easily, because they just had the better ability, the better to do so. And Fulham looked like that team yesterday. We looked like a top six team yesterday. You know, they have so much energy, as Dan says, up the business end of the pitch, that they are able to press really, really well and as a team. And I don't really remember a time where they actually won the ball in that part of the pitch at all. And I think that shows what a brilliant display it was from everyone all over pitch.
I don't think you can do this without Calvin Bassey. And I'm just going to put him out there as a reason, just because he has transformed our back four from that. Like, I remember, you know, what Jack and Loz mentioned a lot, which is the triangle of death. It's not gone. It can definitely come back. But when we look at our back four at the minute, I don't seem so worried when it goes back to Leno, because I know that Bassey's going to be able to cover him. He's quick enough to be able to get to that. And he spends, I'd probably say, 60% of the game covering for Anthony Robinson. Not a bad thing, by the way, because he's bombing up the pitch. But when you've got a left-sided centre-back that can make his way there, Tosin can then pick the pass. That drags Son and Maddison out to that side, meaning then, oh, cool, we'll find some of the quality on the right. It's a lot easier to do when you're not firefighting, whereas I think in a lot of our previous situations, we were firefighting in the press instead, going panicking, how do we get rid of this ball? How do we get out? Whereas this situation was clearly planned. Get it to Tosin, he'll pick the right passes, and then we'll work our way through their team. And I've really looked forward to, hopefully, this same centre-back pairing continuing, because I don't think that, I'm sure we'll get onto it with questions, but I don't think you're going to find that many situations where a centre-back partnership gels that well. So if Tosin's looking for a move, I don't think he's going to be going, hey, I could play in a hugely better team than this and definitely get a starting spot.
Yeah, well, we've spoken at length about how important these two are to the squad, then just pray that Marco manages to convince Tosin to stay, because yeah, it's just joyous to watch. It really is. Just quickly, Dan, before we move on to some questions, and there are some pretty fun ones in there, as you'd expect. We are only 1 point off where we were this time last season, which I think is quite a staggering achievement. And you know, football fans, and I guess Fulhamish as well as an entity, are also guilty of this. When there's a good win, everything's, you know, fantastic. And then when there's a disappointing victory, we can sort of venture into kind of hyperbole occasionally and sort of lose sight of the bigger picture. But just what this Fulham side has achieved, and the fact that, you know, last year was our record-breaking season, it was you know, we're venturing into uncharted waters, and we're doing the same again this season with, on paper, what initially looked like not as strong a squad. I mean, when you're looking until now, until the end of the season, what are the things that stand out to you that you think are achievable? What can we look forward to as Fulham fans, as a fan base? What's realistic, and where do you think we'll be come May when we're reflecting upon the season as a whole and how we're looking at it all. I mean, for me, I'm looking at Brentford. They had a horrible, horrible loss at Turf Moor this weekend. You saw Frank in tears trying to get something out of the Brentford end. I was just with, before we recorded, two of my good mates who are both Bees fans, and they're looking at that fixture against Fulham thinking, I don't want to be there, because it's could you imagine if we put them in it? So that could be something really special. Obviously, we've got the opportunity to have an influence on the title race with Liverpool and Man City coming to Craven Cottage. I mean, what are you looking at as the key dates and what on and you know to look forward to, and what do you think we can achieve, Dan?
Yeah, it's hard to look past Brentford away. And honestly, like I say this completely with my chest, I would happily hand over 3 points to every other team from now until the end of the season if by some miracle winning at the G-Tech was like almost a final nail in the coffin for them. Like I honestly, if we were involved in the reason why they go down, I wouldn't care if we didn't pick up another 3 points anywhere else this season. But I think, Fazzy.
And we're playing Luton last game of the year. Yeah, we're playing Luton last game of the year as well. Do you remember that the great escape year for West Brom? And West Brom were playing Portsmouth. And if West Brom won, they would have relegated Southampton. So Portsmouth fans basically celebrated the West Brom goals that day as well. And I would be certainly in the away end at the Luton Stadium, which name is just forgotten. I'll be there celebrating. Yeah, I'll be celebrating there in the away end if it relegates Brentford.
You say Fulham are playing them. You mean our under-21s team are playing them? There is absolutely no way that, like, if there is a single chance of us like relegating Brentford in that game. I think he looks and he goes, oh yeah, Muniz has got a strain. Oh, unfortunately, Calvin Bassey has a strain. Oh, Bert Leno's got a strain. Oh, it's the first time we see Bender in goal, and Bender's been on a bender for about a week. What do we do? Oh, we conceded 10 goals and they got relegated on goal difference. What a shame.
I reckon there should be a campaign for, you know, when we had the playoff final against Aston Villa, the white wall. We should have the orange wall for that one in the Hammersmith end. Just
yeah, when I said we should give 3 points to every other team, if we could give Luton 6, that would be ideal as well. If we can work out a way to lose so badly that they get double points for the win, that would be lovely. It's like a bonus point win in the Six Nations.
We can dream. Right, that'll do for part one. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back with some of your questions.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. George here. I'm joined by Farrell, Dan and AF. Just quickly, big thanks to NordVPN for sponsoring this episode of Fulhamish. If you weren't already aware, you can use NordVPN to watch football matches or TV shows which aren't available in your region. I use it on a pretty much a daily basis for my job, and I basically switch my location to Italy, and it means that I can watch all of the Serie A goals without any sort of geo block. So it's great if you want to get more football content online. If you're abroad, for example, and you want to catch up on Match of the Day, then you can switch your location to the UK and it'll allow you to watch BBC iPlayer. You can use one account on up to six devices and you can try it for 30 days commitment free thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So there's literally nothing to lose. And right now, Fulhamish listeners can get a discount for 3 months by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Plus, if you're in the UK, USA, Australia, mate, or Canada, you can get an Uber Eats voucher when you sign up using that link. So that's a great rate, 4 months free, plus an Uber Eats voucher in participating countries. So all you need to do is go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Right, we've got some lovely questions. Thank you to all those who got in touch. We've got a question here from JB. I'm going to chuck this one to AF. He says, absolutely loving seeing Lukic play so well recently. Does he now stay next season? There was a lot of chat linking him back to a move back to Serie A. I think he's done more than enough to prove that he's a Premier League player. I hope he wants to stay. JB, what do you reckon with this one? Can we expect to see Saša Lukic next year?
I think we've got some interesting other factors to consider here, and the fact that Zhao might be on his bike. Now, if Zhao was to leave, that means that, you know, there's no way that Saša Lukic is leaving. I do, however, believe that I think he's got a nailed down place in our squad, not necessarily our starting 11 going forwards. I think it can definitely take some time to, you know, Marco mentioned this with Rodrigo Muniz as well. And he was like, he came to the UK, he was just learning English. He really had to try and settle in this league. And I think the same thing's been happening throughout this season with Saša Lukic. We can't expect him to suddenly just bed straight into, you know, English football immediately. He looks as though he's doing a pretty good job right now, but second season could even be stronger for him. The only thing that could then really change that is if Fulham decide to sign. Let's, you know, obviously we've been linked with Andre for so many seasons. Well, so many transfer windows now, it's becoming a bit silly. If Andre does finally come in and João Paulinho stays, and you've still got Harrison Reed and Tom Kearney playing, then maybe he looks at this potential move to Serie A and thinks, I can, you know, get a starting spot somewhere else that I'm not going to get Fulham. But I think he's a valuable member of the squad. I'd love to see him stay, but I think it determines based upon who leaves and who comes in as to whether he's looking to stay.
Yeah, I feel that's a very well-rounded take. I mean, I'll believe Andre when I see it. We're talking about Brazil's next number six, to be honest. And it seems like the rumour that's just been rumbling on for eternity. But I mean, that would be a midfield force to be reckoned with, that's for sure. We've got a question here for you, Faz. This one's from Elliot. He says, if we beat City in May, would this season's collection of skins make this the greatest Premier League season Fulham have ever had? What do you reckon?
Big if. I mean, there's so many. We've had, thankfully, Fulham have had some really good Premier League seasons down the years. The fact that we've had so many Premier League years is actually quite remarkable, to have some really good ones as well. We've obviously had some bad ones too. This year has been pretty good already, let's be honest, with all the, you know, these scalps that we've had. Cup semi-final as well, which was pretty special. You know, it's too difficult to judge with some other ones that, you know, come to mind. The seventh place finish, you know, qualifying for the Europa League that time, that Europa League season as well. The fact that we were so comfortable in the league at that time that we could concentrate on the Europa League. Last season was fantastic as well on the pitch. But yeah, this season would certainly be up there. I think because of the case of, you know, coming into the season, I wouldn't say it was necessarily doom and gloom, but I don't think that we never thought that we'd be in this good as a comfortable position as we are. And it just shows how magic Marco Silva is.
I think Faz has absolutely nailed that. It's hard to definitively say what's the best, but contextually, potentially it's got to be the most impressive because of not just where we were at in the summer, but where we were at, like, two or three months into the season, and not even like first couple of games, but like a considerable way into the season. And I fully hold my hands up. I was on a podcast and I said we had to be in the relegation discussion at one point in the season because things looked that bad. And for me, that's why I think this season is more impressive than last season. And where last season you could look at individuals and say, like, you know, these players really stood out, and Polina and Mitrovic and Leno were core reasons why we did so well last season. For me, this is just like one big ball of Marco Silva genius that has created this season. Like, this isn't reliance on anyone. This is a man who has just found answers to problems and found solutions that I don't think many managers would have been able to do. And I think other Premier League managers are in the same situation he was in. You know, we've had our own injury problems. We had our problems in the transfer market. I think you'd struggle to find a manager who would have done as good a job this season as Marco Silva, but you won't hear people talk about it. And we spoke about it recently. Like, Gary O'Neill rightly gets plaudits. Marco Silva's doing just as good a job. And you know what? Fine. If no one wants to speak about it outside of Fulham, that's fine by us, because we'll happily keep this bloke forever.
I think one of the reasons for that as well is that, like, Marco Silva has in the past, you know, I would say thrown his toys out of the crown. We've seen Fulham managers do it over the years. But when it came to the end of the transfer window closing, he said, that's pretty much where I expect it to be. And he said, for January, I don't expect much activity. We didn't get much activity. So he's been kind of running under the radar almost intentionally. He's been saying, I'm going to overachieve based upon what I was expected to with maybe this squad. But he hasn't moaned as much. Now, maybe that's to his own detriment, because he could have been like, hey, I came into a situation where I could not achieve this season and I've gone and done it. But I don't think he really wants plaudits in that way. I think what he wants is a bit of stability for a little while. And then I'm sure he's expected to be backed later on down the line, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like so different to other managers' approach. You remember when Scott Parker was towards the end of his days at Bournemouth, and he did that press conference where he essentially said, with the squad that we've got, like, we couldn't possibly... Right? Yeah, and then obviously he left, and then O'Neill came in and kept him up with exactly that squad, completely showing him up. But it's like the exact opposite of what Marco Silva's done, effectively. I mean, yeah, it's just... unbelievable things that man is achieving. Just on off the back of another point you made in that answer about how we just seem to be going sort of under the radar a little bit, and we're not really getting the punditry and praise. Paul Budd asks AF, seeing a lot of whinging about the lack of punditry praise on our performance. Should we just accept that we won't get the level of credit we deserve and just crack on? We know we're a very decent team. There's nothing worse than playing the victim. I mean, I'm kind of awful. I'm quite happy for us to be under the radar, if anything, to be honest. You know?
I used to care. I genuinely did. I used to be like, I'd watch Match of the Day back and I'd be like, hey, why didn't I say that Fulham won and they said this team lost? And I've started to care less. Like, I think it matters to outsiders and the neutral fans who are watching this as to go, okay, Fulham, I haven't really heard much about them this season. I'm fine with that. Having a season like this, where we know that we are overperforming and we can see, you know, the growth in players like Rodrigo Muniz, that is what we love to see. I don't really care so much for the victim mentality that we've seen from some other teams, where like, oh, we're constantly under injury pressures. We're under this. We've had all kinds of pressures this season, but I've just loved the way that we've overcome it. What other people see from the outside has bothered me so much less this season. I don't know if that's because I've been reading less of it. But whenever I do, kind of look, yesterday was the perfect example. We beat Spurs 3-0, probably the pick of the games, last on Match of the Day. That's fine. Like, they don't rate Fulham as an interesting team. We're not massively over-supported from a wider perspective in the Premier League. They just think, okay, Fulham did a great thing. But for us, we know what it means to Marco. We know what it means to the players. And I think that's why it's a special season, because it means probably more to us than it does to outsiders.
Oh, well said, AF. Well said. We've got a really fun question here from Marco Silva is Magic, who asks, and perhaps we're sort of venturing into football cliches territory a bit here, but he says, at what point does Muniz become a streets won't forget player, likes of Al-Tarat or Michu, etc.? Farrell, I want to first of all ask you, what, from your perspective, what makes a streets won't forget player? And will our baby-faced Brazilian venture into that sort of conversation? What do you reckon?
I suppose, like, those are sort of flash-in-the-pan players, if you take the couple of examples that that they suggested there. And I would like to say that if that is the case, I don't want Muniz to be a Streets Won't Forget player, because that would mean that this is the 3 months that he absolutely bossed the Premier League, was in the conversations with Haaland and Salah and, you know, what the hell, Alan Shearer as well, and then just disappears into football obscurity. I don't want that to happen. So hopefully it doesn't happen and he continues banging in a couple of hundred more Fulham goals.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I don't really know what makes a Streets Won't Forget player. Just a sort of mercurial talent who sort of never really got the mainstream plaudits, but was pure talent, I guess. I don't really know. Michu, I'd argue, is one of the vibiest players the Premier League's ever seen. I mean, obviously, like Swansea, certainly the best Barnet the Premier League's ever seen. That's for sure. There's a really funny photo on Twitter a few days ago of him at Cheltenham. And the caption was, Michu giving off big, disgraced indie frontman appearing at court vibes. So he just looks with his little like sort of haircut and a sort of like trendy little suit. He looked, he looked $1 million. But yeah, hopefully Muniz will surpass that level. What are you saying, Dan?
I think to be a Streets Won't Forget footballer, and as Faz says, I hope he doesn't become one of these, but he's one overhead kick away.
It's coming.
That's what we're waiting for. That's what we need to wait for the rest of the season. He's going to do it.
That'll be evolution complete, where Muniz all of a sudden becomes like in the Ballon d'Or conversation. It's like it will be his arrival, and only the Fulham fan base will know. You don't know how many times he's attempted that.
unless he does it as his 14th goal to match Aleksandar Mitrovic, and it then makes a draw against Luton, which means that Brentford stay up, in which case, forget the overhead kick. We don't want it, Muniz.
Dan, Alex FFC asks, with Robertson having another stormer last night, is there a genuine chance that he might go in the summer? And if so, who would we be looking at to replace him? I mean, he's arguably pretty irreplaceable to this Fulham squad. But I mean, Farrell mentioned it earlier. He's got all of the attributes that you need to be a top player, and you know, at the top level. Sammy's always been sort of suggesting that he'll leave to a Man City or the like, and he seems to have added delivery into his repertoire as well. I mean, should Fulham kind of be looking over their shoulder?
Yes, and it is a concern. And I do think there's an element that the best player he can possibly be in the best performances is actually at Fulham, in terms of like how we set up and what we, or Marco Silva, demands from his fullbacks and how he wants them to play. Not many other teams actually play like that. Another thing that I was actually thinking yesterday, which is a sort of like a saving grace, hopefully, and it might be ridiculous, but Ryan Aitnouri is having an exceptional season at Wolves.
He's brilliant.
He was brilliant against us. He has been brilliant all season. He was very good again against Coventry yesterday in that ridiculous game. And I think if a big team's looking for a left back, I don't know, but something in me feels like they would see him as more viable. I think Jedi can look a little bit awkward at times in possession. And I think Aitnouri has more about him where he might be able to play that more inverted role as a left wing back. He can play against us. He played on the right wing, on the left wing. He played up top towards the end of the game. And part of me actually has a hope, maybe a foolish hope, that if a team is in for to spending big money on a left back this summer, I think that he'd be the top of the list. And that might help us a little bit, is that emergence from him. But there's absolutely no doubt that Anthony Robertson could cut it at the very top of the game. It would just depend on how that team plays. Because if you look at how Arteta's Arsenal play, I wouldn't want Anthony Robinson playing as an inverted left back tucking into the base of midfield, because you lose all of his qualities by doing that. So it would need a team that legitimately allows their fullbacks to get forward and affect the game. And actually there aren't that many, especially if we're looking in England, there aren't that many teams that are bigger than Fulham that play like that.
Liverpool, I'd argue.
Yeah, I think Andy Robertson-esque. I mean, you've seen it with Liverpool, where they have, that they've done it to Trent, right, where they drift him inside, but they have kept that left back going up and down left flank. And then I think if that happens, the question then comes to Jedi, are you more interested in being first choice at Fulham or being second fiddle to Andy Robertson? I think that's the other discussion as well that's worth, and no one knows the answer to that. I think that's totally up to Jedi. But if the question is, could he play for a top six club? Absolutely. Will he leave this summer? I think it would take a lot of money. I think it would. I think we could demand a legitimately big fee for him because he's also homegrown. If a Premier League team wants him, they're going to have to stump up a lot of cash.
And if that was to happen on the second part of that question of like, who would we replace him with? I currently have two names that would be like potentials, right? So we can start with the one that's at Fulham, Balotelli, right? Every time that he's played, he's looked pretty good. Would he stay at Fulham considering he's not got the chance? It's always that same situation we end up with some of our best kind of loan players going, well, actually, I'm not going to go here because I'm not going to get a chance. If Robinson was on his bike, I assume he'd be able to get Balotelli. And at 27, it's not really the end of the world, probably turning 28 this year. It's not really a bad shout. But actually, one that I've seen a fair amount of this season that it's not too dissimilar to Jedi. He definitely doesn't have the same level of pace. Can deliver a pretty good cross is Alfie Doughty. Now, if Luton were to go down...
I knew you were going
to
say that. It's so true.
If Alfie Doughty's there and he's available, I know obviously he's played previously for Charlton as well, so he's played in London before. I think it's one of those situations where he might be the perfect option for us. At 24 as well, we're even looking younger than Jedi towards the future. It would cost us less than we would get for Jedi, so I can see it being something that makes sense. But then you've also got the shout of, you know, Balotelli's there. It was already proved that he could do it for Fulham. Maybe not to the same levels of Jedi. I think he's impossible to replace. But there's probably two players around the conversation. Finding left backs is hard. So those are the probably two that would stick in my head.
I mean, hopefully it won't come to that. But two very good options touted there, AF. We've got one last question. I'm going to chuck this to the entire panel. So this one is from Here for the Fulham, otherwise known as Avas Malik, who asks, does anyone fancy going on a two-day cruise to Paris with me? What do we reckon, gentlemen? So for those who weren't at Craven Cottage yesterday, our very own Avas Malik, Dr. Avas, was called onto the halftime entertainment in which he was one of four contestants who were tasked with the job of kicking a football into the centre circle. And I think it was a sort of closest to pin type challenge. The first three, we had a player representing each of the four stands. First three, absolutely nowhere near. Up steps Avas, hands in pockets, with the cool, calm composure of Rodrigo Muniz in front of goal. He only goes and bloody does it, doesn't he? Straight in the centre circle. Unbelievable scenes. And he won a...
absolutely fair play.
River cruise to Paris, thanks to one of Fulham's sponsors, Royal Caribbean. And interesting little bit of Fulham synergy here. It was a river cruise to Paris, which arguably cost Roy Hodgson his job as England manager, because ahead of the infamous now game that we lost against Iceland, him and Ray, instead of swatting up on the Iceland team, decided to go on a river night cruise of the Seine because Ray, quote, had never seen Paris. So there you go. Avas, I hope you can enjoy your trip, well deserved, and following in the footsteps of the great man Roy Hodgson. But I mean, what a moment that was. And Faz, you sort of put it immediately on the group chat being like, is that you, Avas? And I was like, what? And I was just like, some bloke who looks like Avas on there. And I was like, no, it genuinely is. I'm not chatting to him. I don't know how he managed to get called up, but I mean, what a moment.
I was going to say, if I went, I mean, Avas, I can promise I'll take some great photos for you. I'll put some decent Lightroom like edits on it. I'll edit Kate Middleton into the background and everything and cause some real furore. But you won't see me on a boat. Like, you could not pay me enough money to sit on a boat. It's not something I will do. But I'll take some great pictures from afar, maybe a bit like a weird Fulhamish photographer.
What's your aversion to boats, AF? Are you scared of sharks or something?
I don't think there are sharks in the Seine, Goops.
I went on a ferry once and I threw up for 6 hours non-stop on a boat, and you will not, like, honestly, like, I think I see one and someone says to me, oh, you know what, it'd be really fun if you weren't on a cruise. Absolutely not. Doesn't matter how old I am, you won't see them on a boat. Not a thing.
Has anyone here actually ever won like a halftime show or anything like that before? I remember my favourite ever one that was at Fulham was when in the 2010 season when LG was our sponsors and we'd give away at halftime a washing machine to a random member of the crowd. Do you remember those days?
I do. All the things they can actually have been like, oh, here's a decent TV, here's everything. But now you get the washing machine, not even fridge. I mean, I'll put a fridge above a washing machine, but that's a conversation for another podcast, right?
Something very sort of like bullseye game show, like, here's what you've won. It's a 7 kilogram washing machine. That's yours. It's amazing, like someone on the district line.
Delivery not included, yeah.
Winning a 2-night cruise along the Seine from a company called Royal Caribbean is much like winning a washing machine from LG instead of like a 50-inch telly.
Yeah, Avast must have been rubbing his hands together, being like, oh, I'm off to, off to the Bahamas. Thank you. Lovely, lovely stuff. And then it's like, no, you're going, it's a quick trip on the Eurostar. Yeah. And then it's basically like going on the Uber Clipper up and down the Thames, isn't it?
Yeah. In 2014, I was invited to take part in a fan versus fan at Stamford Bridge competition at half time on the pitch, where it was like you had to dribble one of those giant inflatable balls through like a little slalom and then back again, and it was a Chelsea fan versus a Fulham fan on the pitch. And immediately as I set off, I completely slipped over, arse over tits, in front of 40,000 Muppets going way. It was not my best moment, but I managed to rescue it, and I knew that I was winning because as I approached getting back across the start finish line, all I heard was boo. It was so satisfying, absolutely satisfying. And then I geared in front of the benches. It was wonderful. But didn't win anything. Somersault. No prize.
Just your pride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have played football with you, Faz, and I have to say you are quite the player. You have that ability that only two other footballers, including yourself, I've seen to control a ball and shoot all in one motion. The first person I've seen do it is you. The other is Luis Suarez. So very, very fine company there. So I'm not surprised you took on and beat that Chelsea fan. On that note, I think that's all we've got time for today. It's been a lot of fun, as I knew it would be, gents. So all we've got to do is name this pod, name this bish. What are we going for, AF?
Live, laugh, Lukic, every day.
Perfect.
I think we should get that on bucket hats. Can we get that on bucket hats in time for like festival season?
Yes.
Oh, I'm thinking like tea towels.
Oh, yeah.
It's not quite as rock and roll.
It's basically a bucket hat.
There you go. Thank you, gentlemen. It's been a lot of fun. Farrell Monk, pleasure as always.
Oh, it was lovely. Thank you so much to everyone. Thank you to Marco Silva for giving us this moment.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much, Dan.
Cheers, Coops.
And AF, thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
Excellent time of recording. It is St. Patrick's Day, so happy St. Paddy's Day to all of our Irish contingent, Jack Collins, Piers and the like, the Fulham FFC Irish lot. I hope you've had a great day stuck into the pub. And yeah, have a great week. We'll be back on Thursday. Until then, go on, you Whites.
You Whites.